Whenever I tell people that I was born and raised in Kansas, about 50% of the time they say, "Well, we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto." Which is a reference, of course, to the movie Wizard of Oz. In this wonderful movie that's such a classic, a little girl named Dorothy lives in Kansas, and a tornado comes and picks up her whole house and transports her and her little dog Toto away to a completely different land called the Land of Oz. And when she gets there, she starts asking people that she meets how she can get back to Kansas. And they all say, "Well, you'll have to go see the wizard, because the wizard is all powerful." So she and Toto start down the yellow brick road to the Emerald City where the wizard lives. And along the way, they pick up several companions. The Scarecrow, who needs a brain, the Tin Woodman, who needs a heart, and a Cowardly Lion, who needs courage. And they make their way finally to the Emerald City and come before the Great Oz, which is this huge ghostly face that speaks with fire and smoke coming up all around. And they make their requests for a brain and a heart and courage and to get back to Kansas. And the wizard says, "I will grant your requests, but first you must kill the Wicked Witch of the West and bring me her broomstick." So they go off, have many adventures, kill the Wicked Witch, and come back with the broomstick. They come back to Oz and they say, "We've done what you said, now grant us our requests." He says, "I can't do it today, you'll have to come back tomorrow." And Dorothy says, "But you promised." And they're very upset. And just at that time, the little dog Toto goes over to where there's a curtain. And with his teeth, he tugs back the curtain until you can see behind the curtain a little old man speaking into a microphone and pulling levers and pushing buttons. And they go over to him and they say, "You are a humbug. You are a fraud." And Dorothy says, "You are a very bad man." He says, "I'm not a bad man, I'm just a bad wizard." So, as it turns out, the wizard tells them that they really do have everything they need. The Scarecrow does have a brain, and the Tin Woodman does have a heart, and the Lion really is courageous, and Dorothy has the ruby red slippers that she can click and go back. She finds herself and Toto back in her bedroom, in her house, in Kansas. Happy ending. But the big point of the Wizard of Oz, the movie, is that the wizard is a fraud. He's just an old man operating behind a curtain, and he's pretending to be something that he's not. He's pretending to be all-powerful, but he's just an old man who's fooling people. And this is what is happening in the epistle by the Apostle Paul today. You knew I'd get around to that, didn't you? Paul has had a conflict with the people in the church in Corinth. He's had a falling out with them, and he's been hurt personally. He's been wounded. They've hurt his feelings. He says, "I was utterly, unbearably crushed." And now in this letter to the Corinthians, he's trying to patch things up, and he's trying to restore his credibility, and he's trying to bring back his authority as an apostle. Apparently, we don't know the whole situation because we only have one side of the story, but apparently there have been other leaders in Corinth, in the church there, and they've been running down Paul. They've been saying, "Well, he's not the real thing. He's not a real apostle. He's a fraud." So Paul is trying to convince them that he is the real thing. He says, "I'm not hiding anything from you." He says, "I'm not operating behind the curtain. By the open statement of the truth, I commend myself to your conscience. I'm the real thing." And in order to prove it, he goes back to the story about Moses in the Old Testament. Moses comes down from Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments on the tablets and gives them to the people. But because he's been in the presence of God, his face is shining with the glory of God. And the people can't stand it. It's too bright. So Moses puts a veil over his face so that he won't blind the people. When he goes into the tent of meeting to talk with the Lord, he takes the veil off. And when he comes out, he puts the veil back on when he's with the people. And Paul says, well, what is the deal with the veil? What is he hiding? He says, by contrast, I'm not hiding anything. I have seen the glory of Christ. I was on the way to Damascus when the bright light shone all around me and I fell to the ground and I saw the risen Christ. And I'm here to tell you about it. I'm not going to hide anything. I am open to you. By the open statement of the truth, I commend myself to your consciences. There's no curtain. There's no fraud going on here. In fact, Paul says, once you have seen the glory of Christ, you will be transformed. And you won't need to hide anything. He says, all of us with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror, in other words, directly, are being transformed from one degree of glory to another. In other words, when we look upon Jesus, we are changed. Seeing the face of Jesus, meditating on the face of Jesus, will change you. If you're visual like me, sometimes it helps to look at a painting of Jesus and gaze upon that painting to see Jesus. I grew up in the Methodist Church, and every Methodist church I know has got a copy of the painting by William Holman Hunt. It's called The Head of Christ. And it's a beautiful painting. Christ looks noble, sensitive, compassionate. And there's this light that seems to glow out of his face when you look at that. And that painting has affected me, I think, all my life. Another way you can gaze upon the face of Christ is to meditate with an icon. Icons are painted in such a way that when you meditate on the icon and look into the eyes of the icon, it's like the eyes of God are looking back at you. And you can become closer to God in that way. But the classic way that we gaze upon Jesus is by reading the stories about Jesus in the Gospels. That's why we read the Gospel in the middle of the people here every Sunday. The Gospels show us the character of Jesus. They show us his face. And when we read the stories and we look on Jesus and on his compassion and his gentleness and his wisdom, even his suffering in the Passion story, then we become changed ourselves. Paul says, all of us with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord, are being transformed from one degree of glory to another. And then we're able to speak the truth. We don't have to hide then. We can be ourselves. I think probably all of us have some kind of shields that we have, that we don't show everybody everything about us. We need some protection. We can't just speak everything we say or that we feel or think. But I think as we mature as people, as we become closer to Christ, we are able to be more honest and more truthful and more open and more transparent as human beings. We are being transformed from one degree of glory to another if we look on the face of Jesus. So I think that's what Paul is saying in the epistle today, that as we come to know Christ, we ourselves become more like Christ, and we become more open and more honest and we share that with other people, they can see it in our faces. I was listening to National Public Radio yesterday, and they had a piece about a lady who was 103 years old, who was visiting Grand Canyon National Park. And in the visitor center there, they had a program called Junior Rangers. And she said, "Oh, I wish I could be a Junior Ranger." And they said, "Well, you can. I mean, there's no age limit on Junior Rangers." So she took the Junior Ranger pledge. And this is the pledge. "I promise to discover everything I can about the Grand Canyon National Park and share what I discover with everyone else." And I thought, you know, that's a perfect mission statement for a Christian if you just change Grand Canyon to Jesus. "I promise to discover all I can about Jesus Christ and share what I discover with others." By the open statement of the truth, we commend ourselves to the conscience of others. Amen.
Amen.